Welcome back, everybody. I'm Rick Pettigrew to bring you our four featured news stories from this past week of Archaeologica. Send us feedback on the Archaeology Channel Facebook page or post a message on our social networking site, ArchaeoSeek. Three folding books or codices in the Aztec style from the first century of Spanish rule in Mexico are now in public ownership and confirmed authentic. Food traces on obsidian pieces from Easter Island point to contact with South America. An incredibly preserved late Bronze Age village in England now is being called Britain's Pompeii. And early Neolithic canoes from a lake bottom in Italy suggest the revolutionary use of sails or double-hulled watercraft. Thanks to everyone for supporting our subscription platform Heritage Broadcasting Service, available at heritagetac.org. We now have hundreds of titles you can binge upon on Roku. Please help us spread the word. Again, that link is heritagetac.org. Our tour program, TAC Tours, will continue in 2024 with our tour of megalithic sites in the Brittany region of France. We have only two spots remaining. The link to our tour program is at archaeologychannel.org/tours. And now here's Laura Kennedy with the audio news from Archaeologica. We hope you find this to be a valuable part of your day.
Welcome to the audio news from Archaeologica. I'm Laura Kennedy, and these are the headlines in archaeological and historical news for the week of March 17th through the 23rd, 2024. Our first story this week comes from Mexico, where a collection of Aztec documents recording their history is now under public ownership. As reported by Heritage Daily, a private owner previously held the codices of San Andrés Tetepilco, a set of three folding books dating to the late 16th to early 17th century. The codices chronicle life in pre-Hispanic Mexica, including the reign of Ixcoatl, the fourth king of Tenochtitlan, the founder of the Aztec Empire. They also depict the arrival of the Spanish, depicting conquistador Hernán Cortés in the armor of a Roman centurion. This collection is one of the mixed codices, which incorporate traditional art and writing in Nahuatl and Spanish, the latter written in the Roman script. The codices were made with natural materials. The paintings were done on amate, a type of paper made from tree bark, and the inks used were made from charcoal, plants, indigo, and multiple shades of ochre. The codices are believed to be a continuation of the Baturini Codex, which depicts the Mexica's migration from the island of Aztlán to the Valley of Mexico, where Tenochtitlan would later be established. A team of archaeologists from the National Institute of Anthropology and History, or INAH, has been working to confirm their authenticity. According to a representative from the Institute, their researchers were finally able to gain access to the codices 2 years ago. A team of conservationists and researchers from the National Autonomous University of Mexico Physics Institute studied the composition of the documents and affirmed that they are genuine. From there, INAH worked with a number of companies and individual philanthropists to raise 9.5 million pesos, or about $570,000, for the acquisition. The National Library of Anthropology and History now holds this collection. Next, we go to Rapa Nui, widely known as Easter Island, where a new study indicates that its earliest inhabitants were in contact with South Americans as early as 1,000 years ago. Historically, scientists have debated when Rapa Nui was settled and whether its inhabitants came from Polynesia, South America, or both. Today, a key issue is whether the Polynesian people of the island were ever in contact with the people of South America. As reported by Live Science, the study analyzed food traces left on 20 obsidian blades. A Chilean research team published this study in the journal PLOS ONE. The obsidian blades were originally recovered in 1987 from Anakena, the site of Rapa Nui's earliest known settlement. Anakena was inhabited from about AD 1000 to 1300. Researchers were able to classify 21 of the 46 starch grains they identified. 8 species were present: breadfruit, taro, Tahitian apple, purple yam, achira, sweet potato, ginger, and cassava. Cassava is also referred to as yucca or manioc. Sometimes a single obsidian blade held multiple species, leading the researchers to infer that the tools were used to prepare food in various ways. Achira, sweet potato, and cassava are indigenous to South America, some 3,000 miles from Rapa Nui. They could have been brought to the island only by voyagers coming from South America. This study also marks the earliest known evidence on the island for breadfruit and Tahitian apple, which are essential Polynesian crops today. The earliest Polynesian settlers likely brought them from their homeland when they first arrived. This is also the earliest identification of ginger in remote Oceania, which could have been used as a medicine and a spice. Evidence of yam and taro had previously been identified on Rapa Nui. Ginger, yam, and taro are also likely to have arrived from the east. Oral histories among the Rapa Nui people suggest their ancestors made at least one round-trip journey to South America during the early years of the island's settlement. Animal bones previously confirmed that early settlers ate fish, dolphins, seals, chickens, and rats. However, scientists still need to thoroughly investigate the plant remains. According to Andrea Seelenfreud, study co-author and archaeologist at Chile's Academy of Christian Humanism University, these findings are solid evidence of sustained interactions between South Americans and Polynesian voyagers. However, other researchers caution that the accuracy of the plant identifications in the study needs to be confirmed by more analysis. Our third story takes us to England, where the study of an abandoned Bronze Age village is providing a blueprint of the everyday lives of the inhabitants of its marshy landscape in the Fenland district of the eastern part of the country. As reported by phys.org, the village's remains are located at Must Farm, an archaeological site in the east of England. The settlement dates to around 850 BC. 8 centuries before the Romans arrived in Britain, making it nearly 3,000 years old. The Cambridge Archaeological Unit began excavating the site in 2015 and has studied thousands of its artifacts in the years since. They published 2 reports detailing their findings. Based on analysis of the remains, the town was less than a year old when a catastrophic fire destroyed it. The buildings and their contents caved into the muddy river running underneath the town. Together, the charring and waterlogging led to exceptional preservation. Some have called the site Britain's Pompeii. The village's river was slow, shallow, and thick with vegetation, cushioning the scorched remains of buildings and objects as they fell. This formed an archaeological mirror of what had stood above, allowing researchers to map the town's layout. Researchers excavated the ruins of 5 structures, as well as the walkways and fencing. According to the research team, the original settlement was likely twice as big and may have held up to 60 occupants in family units. Unfortunately, quarrying in the 20th century eliminated half of the site. One of the main roundhouses covers nearly 50 square meters of floor space. It appears to have distinct activity zones, similar to rooms in a modern home. Remnants of 9 canoes, hollowed from old tree trunks, were located upstream. The team dated them from across the Bronze Age into the Iron Age, which began in Britain around 800 BC. The team also recovered smaller items that illuminated aspects of village life. They found tools for making textiles, cutting hair, and harvesting crops. Also unearthed was a bowl still containing a wooden spatula and its meal of wheat grain porridge mixed with animal fats. Decorative beads were spread throughout the site, including part of a necklace made from glass, amber, siltstone, and shale. Nearly all the beads originated in distant lands, including northern and eastern Europe and the Middle East. The trade networks of the time made this possible. According to Mark Knight, report co-author and excavation director, the village's inhabitants were confident builders and architects. Their roundhouse roofs were designed to keep the spaces warm, waterproof, and well ventilated. The cause of the fire that destroyed the settlement is unknown. One possibility is that the fire was an accident. According to David Gibson, report co-author and archaeological manager at the Cambridge Archaeological Unit, another possibility is that an attack may have been the cause, since the site's inhabitants never returned for their belongings. Gibson also added that it's likely that settlements like this are waiting to be uncovered across Fenland. Finally, we head to the Mediterranean Sea, where canoes uncovered in a Neolithic village provide insight into the lives of the people who made them. As reported by Heritage Daily, archaeologists from the Spanish National Research Council have published their analyses of these boats. The team proposes that communities used them for travel and trade along the Mediterranean Sea shores more than 7,000 years ago. The canoes were recovered from the submerged Neolithic village of La Marmota, located north of Rome. The archaeological site is 300 meters from the modern lakeshore, 11 meters below the surface. The water and sediment covering the remains protect them from further erosion. Underwater excavation started in 1989, when the first evidence of the site appeared under Lake Bracciano. The last excavation occurred in 2009. Archaeologists found thousands of preserved items, including utensils and heavy-duty tools. The five recovered canoes are currently on display at the Museum of Civilizations in Rome. The team used radiocarbon dating to place them between 5700 and 5100 BC. This makes them the oldest known Neolithic boats in the Mediterranean. People crafted them from hollowed-out trees using four distinct varieties of wood. Although some of the canoes were found in fragments, what remains of their construction still provides insight into the technical knowledge, woodworking skills, and construction abilities of early agricultural and pastoral communities. Specific modifications to the canoes, evidence of reconstruction experiments, and the discovery of stone tools linked to nearby islands indicate that the canoes were strong enough to sail on the sea. Similarities between these canoes and more recent navigation systems indicate that the early Neolithic people made many major advances in transportation over water. They had a high level of technical skill and were adept at working with wood, animal skins, textiles, and more. In particular, the discovery of three T-shaped objects with holes associated with one of the canoes suggests that these people knew how to attach sails or even make double-hulled boats or catamarans. Nothing like this has ever been seen for such an early period. According to the research team, given the findings during previous excavations, a large part of La Marmota may still be unexamined. More preserved canoes might be uncovered in the future. The Marmota canoes offer much insight into how Neolithic farming groups could travel all over Mediterranean Europe and the coasts of Europe and Africa, spreading their revolutionary way of life. That wraps up the news for this week. For more stories and daily news updates, visit Archaeologica on the World Wide Web at archaeologica.org, where all the news is history. Also, be sure to check out our growing subscription platform, Heritage Broadcasting Service, at heritagetac.org. I'm Laura Kennedy, and I'll see you next week.
This has been the audio news from Archaeologica, presented by the Archaeology Channel. Be sure to check back with us next week for our next edition. You can spread the word about the audio news by clicking on the Share This link on our audio news webpage, or just by telling your friends. Thanks very much for stopping by.